Hello again, it's David Collins with another episode of BitNote. Video game music for you to enjoy. So, why don't we start things off with a kind of an upbeat intro music. This is for a bit of a war game released on this on multiple platforms around the turn of the millennium, and have a listen. And that was the intro, well, menu music for Hidden and Dangerous. It was developed by Illusion Softworks, and that music was arranged by Jim Rose, I believe. Once again, a little trouble with the credits, knowing that who exactly composed what. Hidden and Dangerous is set during World War II, as many, many games are. I think one online commenter remarked the game industry is obsessed with World War II games longer than World War II actually ran for, but that's a whole different story, and certainly it's not unique to video games, just look at the movies based on it. But Hidden and Dangerous set itself out apart. It was tactical. Essentially, the setup was that you controlled a team of SAS operatives as they completed a mission. Usually you'd control about four of them, and this was sort of the key thing. You know, you're used to a lot of games where you go around and shoot in a corridor first-person shooters, but no. In this one, you controlled a whole team, and you better damn well sure they work like a team. And so you're wondering, of course, when you're not controlling, who's controlling the other three team members? And the answer was usually the computer. I always really wanted to, like, play a multiplayer version of the game and work with others online, you know, so that we could all be strategic together. But, I was playing on Dreamcast. It was only, you know, me controlling one and the computer controlling the others and me giving commands to the others. It's obviously become very common just to have computer control characters. But I suppose even if there had been an online version which I'd been able to play, it would have been kind of annoying because you just have people just throwing in, jumping. It would have just been hard to coordinate things because often when people game online, they're on for a quick thrill rather than strategic working it out. But this game had you perform a number of missions. Essentially, they could be all sorts of locations, sort of a city location, a secret facility, a train yard. The first one has you cross a bridge into the enemy territory, and it was stealth. You had the advantage as long as the enemies didn't see you. If you met an enemy and the enemy met you in an open corridor, they could just launch a barrage of bullets at you, and you could probably, like, get killed right then. Now, of course, that might be bad because you still got three other members, but it's not something you want to make a habit of doing. And so that's how you pretty much did each episode. You tried to control each character, walk them into place, and often what you did was get very, very strategic about it. For instance, you had to try to... The trick was always just to kill the German, you know, kill the German soldiers in ways that didn't alert other German soldiers. And of course, it's terrible to take other people's life, but, you know, war is hell and all said and done. And so that was, I think it was one of my earliest experiences of that, of playing a game where you actually had to be careful, strategic, lay down your enemies. I mean, in one case I realised, you know, I'd be basically setting a dynamite in the top of a submarine and detonating them, and I realised, okay, if I do this, it's probably going to bring some German soldiers running. So I had to, like, set up other of my soldiers so that they were lying in wait with, you know, heavy machine guns, and they knew that, you know, once the Germans came distracted by the explosions, they would rush in and then just get hit down by a hail of machine gun fire. I think I already talked about Commandos 2, which was a really good game and sort of the same thing. But Hidden and Dangerous, like I said, it was like more of a 3D version, and also pretty much every member of your team was pretty much identically skilled. Usually you could equip them with different weapons, but they were all pretty much the same. I just liked the atmosphere. There was a good sense of tension. There was a good sense of stealth. If something went wrong, the whole mission could go south very quickly and have to start again, and it could be irritating. Especially if you accidentally did a stealth thing or you tried to make a sniper shot and it didn't quite work out. I mean, the game gave you so many nice scenarios and stuff, but you always had to be extremely careful to move forward, make sure the Germans didn't see you, to make sure you attacked in just the right way, to make sure you figured out the right methodology. In games like this, there's always a plan. There's always a system that the game developers wanted you to approach it. And if you can figure out this system, or the one that works best for you, you can usually make the missions a lot easier. But it's always a bit of a challenge. And sometimes you often have to look at the environment and sometimes figure out what would be the best way and look at the German enemy routes. These days, stuff like using stealth and trying to be careful is pretty damn common. In fact, I was actually listening to an audio from John Carmack, legendary game developer and designer, when he was developing the original Wolfenstein 3D, which is incidentally did involve German soldiers. And in an original version, they were saying, why don't we make it stealth so that they have roots and the person can just jump up and has to be stealthy. And in the end, they decided gamers just liked it more if they could just go in guns blazing. So kind of a bit of a death knell. But stealth has definitely had its popularity. In the mid-90s, it was Metal Gear Solid, and then again, it was Splinter Cell. But I mean, you know, it always can be a bit frustrating, but with Hidden and Dangerous, that was part of the package. You tried to make it, whether you were running through trenches or trying to make your way through, or trying to work in cover in the cold light of day, it was always tricky enough. At one stage, I got really frustrated with the stealth, actually. It was when my team were in a city, and we basically had to steal civilian clothes off a washing line to equip ourselves. And I just got so tired with all the stealth. So basically, my team got into a car and stole a car and just raced it through the city as fast as possible, trying to run over the Germans. We ended up running, crashing, the Germans shot at us, and we exploded. So that technique really didn't work. If you actually want to play this game, it's actually freeware. It was released for free in order to publicize its sequel, Hidden and Dangerous 2. So if you've got a computer, you can start it up and play it. Now, obviously, it's a bit of an old game, so I'm not sure how well it will run on modern computers, because sometimes things can change, but that's always something good to look up. So, let's move on to another game that also involves teamwork between four different characters, only this one actually allowed other people to play as those four characters online. So this is where we get cool with online stuff, with people around the world. I remember I was so excited about the idea of working with people online, because it's like, you know, we can just all combine our forces and work together to attain this objective. And it turns out it's not always quite like that, especially since sometimes they swear or people go on their own directions or people just don't even really talk that much, which sometimes people want to do. But this is some music from Left 4 Dead, and we are going to start with the intro theme to Dead Center. Enjoy. Thank you. And that music was from Left 4 Dead 2, developed by Valve. The music, like I said, was it's the intro music to the first mission of Left 4 Dead, called Dead Center. And it was composed, I believe, by Mick Maraski. Now, to be honest, Valve have this sort of like flat structure. I spoke last week about how it's hard to find specific credits for who does what. But with Valve games, it's even worse because they don't really have predefined roles. They've got this kind of like system where anyone who in the entire game studio wants to work in a game can, and they all work together and like all have their own areas of expertise and build collaboratively, and no one has a single role. It's this sort of crazy thing about Valve. They've been trying to advertise this aspect a lot as they're trying to get recruitment from people in various areas. But the basic gist is that essentially they all work together to make it. No one has a role, no one has a specific purpose. They all work together collaboratively, and so the credits are usually a list of made by and then a long list of names without really any titles beside it. So I'm going to figure out that Mike Maraski has had a role in that song, but I am not sure. Specifically, it seems that Valve Orchestra, they've got an orchestra, and so a Valve Studio Orchestra was responsible for making that song. So there you go. I could go on about Valve. They're certainly a very valued company and a very unique company as well. They're not just developers. They're also helped revolutionize how video games are purchased online over the internet and downloaded. But that's a story for another day, and for now I'll just focus on the Left 4 Dead series, which is pretty big in of itself. It was originally developed, the first Left 4 Dead game was developed by Turtle Rock Studios, and before they even had released it, Valve bought them up and sort of they became part of Valve. Now, the game is actually pretty straightforward. Essentially, a zombie apocalypse has happened. Very original premise, but, you know, that's not exactly where the fun of the game lies. Essentially, you're somewhere in the American Midwest, which I've always got confused, a term I've always got confused about, because it's actually in the northeast of America, but there you have it. And essentially, there are a couple of everyday, regular people, survivors, and they are four of them. And so, essentially, they're quite bummed, basically, about the fact that their world has succumbed to a zombie apocalypse, and so decide that the best course of action will be to go and find rescue through wherever means that is. So essentially, the first game is about four missions. They later added a few more, where the four survivors have to make their way to basically rescue, and the rescue might be in the form of a plane at an airport, or in the fame of a military convoy helping them out of the city, or even just a helicopter, for a straightforward example. And essentially, so for each mission, it's a different escape. And so they've got to make their way through the city, through the campaign, and that's, unfortunately, the zombies prefer to kill them and tear them apart and eat their brains and what have you. So essentially, the survivors have to defend themselves with a large arsenal of weaponry and basically fight their way through the city. Now, it sounds pretty basic, but it had a couple of basic innovations. Its strongest thing was it was all about you were not just fighting alone, you were working with people online. Now, you kind of have your friends, you know, the other survivors, be controlled by a computer, and the computer does a not terrible job. I know that sounds like a backhanded compliment, but generally, computer AI control characters control horribly, but these guys, unless you keep them on a tight leash, but in this case, they actually would do a decent job, even though they didn't understand most of the nuances of combat. So, but most of the time, you just play it online, and either your friends or you know, which you could network online with, or complete strangers would basically control the other characters, and you'd generally try to work together and survive. And it was a pretty fun game. I mean, there were a couple of strategies you could employ, like grabbing the right weapons, getting yourself in the right position. You have to fight through the zombie hordes, and sometimes you have to stay in specific places while waves and waves of zombies attached to you. And of course, there were special zombies. There was the witch, which you can't disturb, and then there was the tank, which was just a gigantic brute who would come and mash you up. And then there were a bunch of zombies that would incapacitate you in some way, like for example, the smoker, which could tie up one of the survivors with his tongue. And I mean, it was just, the interesting thing was just about how often they would incapacitate you, so you'd really have to work together. If you didn't work together, then one of your team members could easily die, and then with the less firepower, you're kind of screwed. So it was a good way of just having all these challenges and gelling it together and just trying to fight your way through and get to the end. Then there was a sequel, and the sequel was pretty damn good as well. It was set in the Deep South generally, which is a nice change of pace, and had also, just like the first game, had a completely new roster of diverse characters, kind of archetypes, but, you know, fun archetypes as well. Like, you know, they had, and like the first one, like, involved this female college student and this Vietnam War veteran. Whereas the sequel, they had was one guy called Coach, who's, you know, used to be a coach, you know, hence his name, and another guy who, called Nick, who I think is my favorite, who's basically this complete scam artist in the suit, but he just has a nice, I just like his attitude, which is kind of sardonic and everything. And the sequel also made it feel more like a movie, you know, because there were a little more plots and all the individual missions kind of linked up with each other, and there was all this journey about, like, breaking through the shopping center, yes, zombies in a shopping center, and breaking out again, and then going through an amusement park, which was actually pretty funny, and then a swamp, and finally, you're in New Orleans, or at least a version of it. And it was kind of funny going through the New Orleans version, because at one part you're in a graveyard, and I'm saying, boy, I recognize this graveyard from Easy Rider. Because, well, actually, I didn't immediately. I had to, like, read the wiki before I figured that out. But, yeah. So it's kind of fun. These are games just have good sense of location. They have good sense of missions and good bit of challenges. I haven't heard any news about whether there's going to be a sequel, but it's a fun game to work on with your friends and play it a lot online. Now, music is used very effectively in this game. As you can say, it kind of had some Deep South influences, but also a bit of tension in it, you know, that really built it up. But there is one song in the game that terrifies people. Now, I actually debate about whether I would edit this, whether I'd actually play this song, because I was worried about giving various listeners heart attacks, but No, don't worry. It's if you haven't played the game, it's probably not going to be that worrisome for you. But for this game, if this music turned on, it meant there was trouble. This, and I'm about to play, is the tank's theme. The tank is basically this gigantic zombie that basically can just hit a car and send it flying at you with the swipe of his hand. Now, it's actually pretty... Actually, now, a pretty fun mode of the game is where one side actually gets to play as the special zombies, but and then you can actually control the tank, which is pretty empowering. But a lot of the time you're playing as survivors, and boy, you know, you always listen out for the music. The music gives you an idea of what's coming up. And basically, when this tune comes on, most gamers just start getting out the Molotov cocktails, getting prepared, because seriously, if anyone's slow and if they don't play this right, one of their team's going to go down at least, and possibly the whole team. So here's the tank theme. Probably the same credits as before, and hope you enjoy. That was the tank's theme tune. Boy, there's a couple of nice remixes in the Left 4 Dead 2, especially there's one version when you're like having the climax finale, waiting for the helicopter, fighting off zombies at this rock concert, and essentially they've got a rock version of that theme tune. But like I said, most of the time you don't like one, you're always prepared for that tune. It's just like in a film where a music tune can really set the mood. In this case, the players react and try to figure out the mood from the music, so they can prepare themselves. All right, we're going to move on to another track now, and this is essentially from a classic light gun game of the 90s. Have a listen. We'll be right back. And that was Gang Headquarters from the Sega Light Gun video game Virtua Cop. And the music there was composed by Kentaro Koyama, who's made a lot of Sega video game music. Now, Virtua Cop, classic light gun game. This is back in the arcades. It's so much a pity with the arcades these days. You know, it's just, back then, you'd go to the arcades and it'd be like going into a video game shop. You'd see what's new, you'd see what you could play, you'd try out the new stuff. Now, I mean, arcades are around, but they're not as popular anymore. But back then, you're always looking to the new thing, and Virtua Cop was one of them. It's a classic light gun game, so there's a plastic gun you pick up, you point at the screen, keep shooting at the enemies. And Virtua Cop was like an example of like revolutionary 3D graphics. In other words, it had 3D graphics. See, back then, things were still early on in 2D, and just to suddenly have this whole 3D graphics, like 3D human beings, you know, not just pasted, and for them to actually be animated and moving, it was so exciting. But Virtua Cop was a fun game. Essentially, you were a police officer, and there were like nice cinematics of you responding to a crime, and then you just suddenly get out, and basically all these enemies would point up, and these glowing circles would appear on them, and they'd tell you how soon the enemies would shoot you at, and you basically had to quickly shoot all the enemies fast enough. So, highly simplistic, but that was what arcade games were about. Shoot all the countless amounts of never-ending supply of enemies and get through the stage, and it was a lot of fun. Obviously, with the old arcade sensibilities, everything was over the top and exaggerated, and, you know, when you shot them, they'd just go flying back, and it was just, and it would also be a little ridiculous as well. I think one of the fun things about the game was that there were a couple of innocent people, and they would always say, don't jump up in front of you and say, don't shoot me, don't shoot me. I mean, it actually got pretty ridiculous. You were wondering, why are these innocent people jumping up and yelling, don't shoot me? Because the trick was you had to just make sure, you know, you'd be so used to shooting at whatever moves that, you know, inevitably a few of them did get shot. But, you know, it's a tip, it's a lesson for life. If you're ever in, for instance, a jewelry store robbery and a bunch of machine gun fire is coming around, don't jump up in front of the line of fire and say, don't shoot me, because by the time people will have heard that, the chances are they may have already gone on a reflex action. The games there were so over the top, brightly colored, and just vibrant that I just love games like that. I mean, okay, you were shooting enemies, but it was just, no one was really taking it seriously, and it was just, it was a good game by Sega. All right, we're coming to the end of our show now. This has been David Collins with BitNote, and I think I'll leave you with a song, you know, to be highly original. This is going to be a song, I think, another song from Left 4 Dead. Yes, I know I've played two tracks from Left 4 Dead 2 already, but I think this is a good one. It's a Bad Man. It's actually, as I told you, there's a rock and roll group in the game called the Midnight Riders. I think I mentioned that in another show, and like you, even one of the climaxes of the game takes place directly in one of their concerts. You actually start up a concert with all the pyrotechnics, everything to attract a helicopter, and you have to, while the helicopter's being alerted and trying to get to your position, you got to fight off the zombie. So it's a real climax. But generally, songs like this are playing in the background, so really letting you know the whole rock and roll spirit. So, David Collins, BitNote. Thank you for listening, and hope to see you next time. Well, I'm a half-done son of a gun with a suitcase full of pistols and money. A lifetime, honey. Well, goddamn girl, well, I'm your man, girl. I'll get your engine singing. Well, sounds good, let me under your hood. We can find out